Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
And now back in making his fourth appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former BC Lions wide receiver Marco Iannuzzi. Let me remind you about Marco's background. He is from Calgary, Alberta. In high school, he led his school to back-to-back provincial titles, and they were undefeated during his time in high school, going 29-0. In 2004, they were the number one ranked team in Canada. He went to college here in the States at Harvard and MIT, and he played his college ball at Harvard, where he is still their all-time leader in kickoff return average, which was helped by a 95-yard return for a touchdown against Brown back in 2010. That year, he averaged 34.5 yards per return, which set their highest single-season average as well. He was a first-round draft pick, the number 6 overall selection by the BC Lions in the 2011 CFL draft. And I'm sure it was no coincidence that the Lions went on to win the Grey Cup that season. And Marco is one of the most philanthropic guys you'll find anywhere. He is doing wonderful things to help fight MS, autism, homophobia, environmental issues, and so much more. He does great work for the BC Children's Hospital and the Children's Hospice of Vancouver. 2016, he was the recipient of the Tom Pate Memorial Award, which is given annually to the player who displays outstanding sportsmanship and someone who has made significant contributions to his team and to his community and the CFLPA. And if all of that wasn't enough, he won the title of Canada's Smartest Person on a TV show of the same name, which aired up in Canada on CBC, and we are honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Marco, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back
Welcome
on the show.
Wow, thanks for that introduction. It's really great to be back, and I've enjoyed being on the line here for hearing the early parts of the show and hearing some stories from the guys, so thanks for having me.
We appreciate it very much, Marco. So, Marco, since the last time we talked, and traditionally when we're talking to you, you're on a bus going somewhere, whether it's to the airport, from the airport, and that sort of thing. But here you are, you retired from the league. Talk about your decision to do so.
Yeah, it was, you're right. I was usually, mid-season when we were talking. Came to a point about halfway through last year's season, and I said to my wife, why don't I, imagine I'm retiring. Every day I'll tell myself I'm going to retire and just see if it feels right, and we'll know if it's right, it's right. So the weeks go on, and I go about 9 weeks straight, and it just felt right as far as I accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish. I played over 125 games, won a championship. You know, my kids, all three of our kids, they got to come and see so many games as a pro, and even at the college level, our youngest, she saw a few of those. So we lived a wonderful storybook professional life. I still had my head intact and my body intact, and you know, with the thoughts of when is your next big hit that could put you out, I decided to get out on top and get out on my own terms. So I had a year left in my contract, and decided to, you know, still retire and get rid of that year. I was able to tell the fans in our last three games that I was retired. So I got to bring my kids out on the field and do a little lap of the field and wave to all the fans after those last three games. It was just a real nice send off, and it was the way I wanted to end it, and it was on my terms, and it was just honestly just a childhood dream come true and a nice end to the era.
And Marco, you mentioned, you know, when's the next big hit coming and that sort of thing. How much did what we've learned over the last couple of years about CTE, how much of that, you know, played into your decision to say, you know what, to your point, I'm intact here, let me get out now before maybe some of this comes around later in life?
You know, I'd say a quarter, but as much as 50% of my decision. You know, the Harvard guys were coming up with those helmets and they were testing them on us over at spring camp way back when I was in university. And that's when, they came out with the SLI Institute there, where they were doing all the brain studies and everything like that. And that's a former Harvard guy too, Chris Nowinski. So I was already kind of on the cutting edge of it then. To see what the greater population knows now, it's kind of what we kind of knew call it 10, 12 years ago, me and the close group of guys that were sort of at the forefront of this. So as my years as a pro went on, and I got a few dings here and there, I got two major concussions in my career, and it was a terrible, dark, depressive state after those concussions, and it was took a great deal of energy just to get out of bed in the morning. And if you've seen my social media and you've seen me on TV, I'm a very energetic, charismatic, smiling guy. And I was still doing that during my depressive states, but I can tell you that the exact opposite human being existed when I went back to my room and closed my door at night. It was a very difficult time, and you know, I started seeing guys retire or get knocked out of the game because of their head injuries. I knew that I didn't want that to be me. To be honest with you, I would say 50% of the deal of me retiring was, hey man, I got an Ivy educated brain, and every shot that I take, whether it be a young quarterback throwing me out to dry over the middle, or who knows what it could be, even if everything's done right, you can still take a shot. And it's just, it was too much risk when I looked at my family and what was going on. I lived my life and my football career, everything I wanted to do. And there was nothing more I could gain, only a lot to risk.
And Mark, you talk about the Ivy League education that you've got. It's a sort of an Ivy League night for us. We had Ross Tucker at the top of the show,
yeah,
who's a Princeton grad. We've got Nick Lowry coming up after you, who went to Dartmouth. So thinking about the Ivy League, and you got to play in, you know, quote unquote, the game, the Harvard-Yale game, over the course of your career several times. What's it like that week? What's Yale like, Yale week like when you're at Harvard?
Oh man. It's pretty neat because it brings everyone together. The coolest thing about sport, and this is why if people say with all the head injury, would you still do it again? Yes, I would still continue to play football again, because the coolest thing about sport is that everyone forgets the problems, the diseases, the stresses they have in their life. They get to come out and enjoy just a match, a game in the mud and the gridiron. And it's just brings people together. So case in point, Harvard versus Yale. Now I can tell you that, yes, there's a diverse group of students at Harvard, but I can tell you that the majority of them might not have been football fans, let's just say. That being said, Harvard does have 41 NCAA sports, but they weren't football fans by nature. Now they come together during that week, and you would not have known any different if you were at Michigan, Michigan State, or whatever, any big rivalry. I mean, it was so cool to see a group of such a diverse group of people come together to support on both sides. You know, like I love to see Yale support, and after the games, it's a rivalry, but it's always a slap you on the shoulder and chuckle about it after type thing, even with the enemy. I mean, we host here in Vancouver a Harvard Yale viewing party, and it's not just a Harvard party. We have Harvard and Yale people there. So I think the camaraderie and the coming togetherness of people is what's most important. And I'll tell you, with 64,000 people at the Yale Bowl and 34,000 people at Harvard Stadium, it was rocking and rolling, and it was honestly some of the coolest memories I had in that Yale Bowl in 2010 when I brought back that we brought back the second half kickoff return for a touchdown. That, like, I can still, right now as I tell you, I'm getting goosebumps because I can still remember the feeling of how loud the fans were, that my chest turned into like a subwoofer, and it was just reverberating with all the cheers. It was just a really, really neat feeling that I only felt a few other times in sport. And Harvard Yale, it was fun.
Bob, questions for Marco?
Yeah, Marco, I watched that from the press box in 2010, and I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. So thanks for all those great memories. And when a guy retires like yourself, you're 31 years old, and you kept your body in shape for so long, Marco, I'm sure you still will. I'm just wondering, what does a guy do fitness-wise from this part out? At least you won't have to worry about getting hit in the head, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, that's actually been a big thing for me for the past 8 months. So for 3 months after I retired, from December to, you know, February, I didn't lift a single weight. Mm-hmm. And my production in life, as general sense, went down. I was less energetic. I was less happy. I was almost in a depressive funk, and it had nothing to do with missing football, because I was so happy to be relieved from the stress of potentially being hurt from football. It was solely the fact that I was used to working out, at least running or working out in some way every other day for the better part of 20 years. And I stopped that for the longest period. I'd never done it for more than a week, stopped that. And I did, and it was terrible. So as soon as I got back into a routine of working out again, and we just built a little home gym at the house, nothing fancy. I got a squat rack and a few dumbbells laying around. And some TRX band type thing. You don't need to have anything complicated at all. You build yourself a home gym for $500, $1,000 if you want to get real fancy. But to be honest, this the daily routine of working out. We put that weight room in the middle of our house. Our kids get to walk by it every day, and they jump in there and do a couple sets of push-ups with us. And we just think that having a healthy life, it starts with your body. You know, I've met a lot of people with a lot of money in their lives in this business I'm in, and also in professional sports. And you know what? If they have a heart attack at age 50 and they're a goner, all that money and fame means nothing. So you got to take care of your body, and that's a real big, important thing for us and our family. And this past 8 months has been a real eye-opening experience for me to really find out the importance of physical activity when I'm no longer an athlete.
And for a guy like yourself, Marco, who's experienced football at the pro level and the dangers involved of any contact sport, I wanted to get your opinion on how you would approach talking to young people, if not your own kids, others that are looking probably to do that in the future and the dangers involved.
Yeah, you know, I like what the SLI is doing. I mean, you can go read a lot about it, but they show a list of all the Pro Bowl and Hall of Fame guys who started football after grade 9, and the list is staggering. You don't need to start football, tackle football, in fourth grade. In fact, right now I coach my kids, soccer and baseball, and they're already trying to put our kids into these specialized programs on a weekly basis. Aside from the sport they're playing, they want them just to focus on baseball, or soccer. Listen, if you want to be the best athlete I became is because I played every sport from badminton, volleyball, track. I did everything, and the coordination you learn and the friendships and the winning and losing, those are the most important things. So you don't need to specialize in football. If you specialize in football at an early age, you will become burnt out. I mean, perhaps the reason that I stopped playing football at the age of 31 was because I started in second grade, and I started tackling in fifth grade, and I had 20 years of football under my belt by the time I was 31, and I don't say I was sick of it, but I was certainly had enough and won't miss not playing football. I'll tell you, I really think that you can enjoy the game, and you're going to learn a lot from the game starting even in ninth grade. And you're not going to be behind. People say, oh, if I don't start early when I get to ninth grade, I'm going to get smoked because all these other kids have a few years ahead of me. Guess what? You're going to catch up quick. Your learning curve is going to be faster. You got to protect your noggin. I mean, the things that you learn when you do have the pressure, let's say you get to ninth grade, you're playing tackle football, you're in the trenches. If you don't do your job, the person next to you could be severely hurt. That kind of responsibility cannot be given to a child in any other way other than an 18-year-old going to war for their country. I mean, in reality, if you don't do your job, the man next to you can break his leg, he can get a concussion, he can be paralyzed. That kind of responsibility I cherish because that's what made me a man. That's what, you know, cured me into the hard iron that I am, was having that responsibility and that dedication. So double-edged sword. I'd love football. I'd go do it all again, but I would not start until ninth grade.
Marco, a couple more before we let you go. And me and Bob and I are big golf fans, and I also do a golf show on Tuesday nights. And you've got a wonderful relationship with Ernie Els and supporting him and his foundation for autism. Talk about the work you're doing with Ernie.
Well, right now I'm walking around my office with a golf club in my hand, so I love the game of golf as well. So what we did was, me and a partner of mine, we brought Ernie Els had 20 tournaments down stateside, supporting his Center of Excellence, the Autism Center of Excellence down in Jupiter, Florida. And we loved what he was doing. We thought he was having such an impact on such a nationwide level that we wanted to bring it up to Canada. So 6 or 7 years ago, we brought up the first tournament here in Vancouver. It was a nice success. The next year, we brought up 3 Canada-wide. So we were in Calgary, and then we were out in Montreal. And then by the third or fourth year, we had split it to 6 locations across Canada. And Though our money doesn't go towards the Center of Excellence down in Jupiter, what we do is we raise the money under the banner of the Ernie Els for Autism, but all the money earned in each province stays in that province to help excellence center-like facilities. So we have Powell's Autism School here. We have a number of Canucks Autism Network. There are programs in each province where we've identified they're helping children on the autism spectrum live more fulfilling lives and help give their families more satisfaction and maybe freedom by knowing that their kids are included, taken care of, and are growing as athletes and as people. So it's been an awesome sort of experience with Ernie, in that the winner of each of our tournaments, or if you raise enough money, we send the winner or the raise enough money down to Las Vegas or Jupiter, wherever Ernie holds finale, and then you have people from the States, people from Canada, all that have supported this cause in their given area, together to play with around with Ernie and some of his buds, and his wife's there, and you get to meet his son, and it's again coming together. I think sport is so important because of people together from such diverse areas, geographically, socioeconomically, brings them together just to support, and to see that culmination at the finale each year, it is a real neat thing to see so many people caring for so many other people and just making our part and doing our part to make this world a better place.
It's great stuff that you do, Marco, and you do it for a lot of other causes as well. I'm not sure anybody outside of maybe Bob Hope or Jerry Lewis has ever done as much for charity and worthy causes as you continue to do. Let our listeners know about some of the other things that you're doing and what you've got coming up on your schedule.
You know, I'm a guy that it's tough for me to say no, and I'm actually kind of just getting a little heat for it here in town right now because my schedule's too filled. I'm helping out with MS, of course. My mom has MS, and it's always been sort of a cornerstone inspiration for me. So whether it's with the MS Society of Canada, where I sit on the board, or some local guys who are doing more holistic approach with the Branch Out Neurological Foundation. Of course, through all the autism stuff, a lot of cancer, diabetes. In the end, this is what I look at it, okay? So the way I look at my mother and her MS, I want to help and do everything I can. And when I was going around asking my friends for them to help me, I felt almost it was a one-way street. So I said, how can I help you? And then they would tell me that they're affected by something. So truthfully, we're all affected by something in our lives. And if we can come together and just take a little bit of the stress, a little bit of the burden, throw an event, raise some money, or put just awareness and just support to embrace the problems in our lives and make them make solutions for them, that's the most important thing. So when I say I'm a yes man, if you come to me with a charity, every one of these charities is well deserving, and I'm happy to help you out as your auctioneer, your guest speaker, whatever it is. Just find me on Instagram, find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, Marco BC Lyons. It's very easy. Just Google Marco BC Lyons, and you can find me on whatever social platform you want. Check out some of my pictures. Check out what I'm doing, and like and comment. And if I can help your whatever you're doing charitably, you just make a comment, and we'll reply back. We'll find a way to maybe get together, put you in touch with somebody in your area, or maybe come to our area. But as long as everyone's working together to help out, it doesn't matter what you're supporting, as long as it's important to you.
Marco, that's tremendous, and you're a tremendous individual, and we can't thank you enough for the number of times you've come in on the show, and you continue to come back and be generous with your time, and for all the wonderful things you're doing across different charities, just for the human race. You're an amazing individual, and you're very important to us, and we can't thank you enough for your time again tonight.
Thank you guys so much. It is a true pleasure to be amongst these amazing guests, even these other Ivy League guys that I don't know why you're having them on the show, like Nick Lowry coming up. I mean, he's a bud of mine, but I can tell you we've had a few Ivy League arguments between the two of us.
No doubt you have. Marco, take care. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to the opportunity, hopefully, to catch up with you again real soon.
Stay well, Marco. All right,
thanks a lot, guys. Cheers.
Take care now.
See ya. That is the great Marco Iannuzzi, and Bob, like I said, I don't think anyone outside of Bob Hope or Jerry Lewis has done as much for charity than Marco has. He's a wonderful person. He's extremely intelligent and so giving with his time. And every one of the things that he does is for an important cause, and he continues to do it year after year, and we are so privileged to have him as part of the show.
You see how receptive he is to helping everyone, Chris, and that Pate Memorial Award is not given to just the faint of heart. He's a man that has a lot of energy and passion for what he does, and we're just happy he made some time for us tonight.
Yeah, and hopefully, like I say, maybe we can get him on the golf side to talk a little bit about golf and the work that he continues to do for Ernie and so many other charities, and then get him back over here on the football side once we get a little further into the season. But a great guy.